Welcome to Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm health integrationist Lena Berman, and I come to you weekly to discuss self-care and integrated health. It's an interesting characteristic of human nature not to miss something until it's gone. So if I said to you, you can add 6 years to your life in exchange for 20 to 30 minutes a day, 6 days a week, you know, doing exercise, that if you could devote that much time daily to exercise, that you could add about 6 years to your life, I really doubt that you would, I doubt that you'd exercise. It just wouldn't, seem like enough. You'd think, well, so I won't live as long. You know, what's the big deal? I won't live as long. But what if I looked into your future and I saw accelerated aging, brittle bones, hip fractures? What if I saw metabolic syndrome creeping up on you so that you were no longer able to control your weight, and that gave you all kinds of musculoskeletal problems? It put a drag on your heart so that your heart became congestive and you began to have problems with your retinas and your eyes failed. And you're in pain a lot. Would you be willing to add 20 to 30 minutes, 6 days a week of some form of exercise now to avoid that scenario? The truth is, it's very hard for people to do that. It's very hard for people to do something now to protect themselves in the future. But it's true. That is what exercise does. It is one of the single most provocative and protective things that you can do. It has a remarkable effect in terms of protecting people not only from getting cancer, but from, if they get cancer, surviving it. There's almost no aspect of your physiologic life that isn't affected by exercise training. So that's what I'm going to talk about today. I'm going to talk about something that is better researched and far cheaper than the human growth hormone shots that are all the buzz in the newspapers today. There are very few negative side effects if you follow good guidelines, and you don't have to depend on anyone but yourself. Today's show, an exercise how-to. Now, before I get too carried away, I want to tie something in with something that I've been seeing in the newspapers the last few days, and it's made me once again miss Dr. John Lee, because I would normally call him and say, okay, we have to get on the air again and talk about hormones. But this dovetails into what we're going to talk about today. Exercise is one of the ways that you can stabilize and maintain healthy hormone levels. And let me explain, and the reason I'm bringing this up is because, once again, in the newspapers, we're seeing a demonization of they're starting on the idea of testosterone supplementation for men, and I can see what's coming. They haven't done a study yet, they said. Well, this isn't true. There have been studies done on testosterone and its effect on human health and andropause since about the 50s and 60s. There were very eminent researchers doing this work, and what they're going to do here is they're going to do a research project with a pharmaceutical brand of testosterone supplementation, which is going to be a non-bioidentical testosterone, like testosterone, methyl testosterone or something, which is not a good form of testosterone. And they're going to overdose people, and they're going to give it to people who don't need it, and they're going to do all kinds of stuff. So watch out for that, and remember when you see those things in the newspaper that, again, they're not, look at the way the study was set up, and remember that there's lots of research already on testosterone, and it does protect the cardiovascular system primarily and a muscle mass and stuff. And there was a thing on breast cancer this morning, and breast cancer is another one of these things that is remarkably well controlled. Its incidence is much lower in people who exercise, and as I said, people who get it, if they exercise, live longer and survive better. But another way, another thing to be watching for in the news is that they're talking about they're disturbed because they're finding larger tumors in women. And they're immediately going to the idea that this is related to obesity and hormone replacement. Well, in a sense it is, because if you are overweight, you increase the amount of estrogen on your body, whether you're a man or a woman. And if the estrogen is unopposed by other hormones, like progesterone, if it's not balanced with the other hormones, then you're in trouble, basically. Estrogen, when it is dominant, is very vulnerable to changes in the environment and pollution in the environment, and it changes and turns into a metabolite, which can damage your DNA, which it does much less if it's opposed and controlled with the use of natural bioidentical progesterone. Now, another thing to think about is that women in the black community are the ones that seem to be coming up with these larger tumors, and not only might we look at the incidence of obesity and the type of food choices that are available in the black community, but we might look also, and people of color in general, we might also look at the amount of pollution in their environment, in the places in the cities where lower income housing is, where people can afford housing, is often a former site of a pollution. Some kind of pollution is dumped there, they're not, of course, talking about the environmental problems there. But the way that this dovetails into exercise is this. What we are seeing again and again now is this tremendous rise in the amount of people with something called metabolic syndrome, which is a pre-diabetic condition, and it creeps up very slowly. The way to protect yourself from it is not only for your diet to control your blood sugars, to keep your diet free of blood sugar raising foods like starches and sugars and things like that, and eating enough rich protein foods and things that are with good fats and things like that. But exercise is an enormous part of controlling and protecting people from the effects of metabolic syndrome, both from acquiring it in the first place, because you will have better control over your weight and your insulin levels if you are exercising. And then you will also protect your cardiovascular system, your heart, your circulatory system, and you will re-regulate your hormones in your body. And here's how it works. If you have high blood sugars, I've done this a million times, if you have high blood sugar from eating a lot of starch and carbohydrates, and again, people will vary in terms of their capacity with starch and carbohydrates. And I am talking about some of the good, unrefined, rougher carbohydrates. Those will still raise your blood sugar. So when people eat grains, even when they're eating whole grains, there's still a starchy effect. Some people will tolerate it and their blood sugars will stay under control, and some people will not tolerate it, and people will do well on differing amounts of carbohydrates. You can get carbohydrates from vegetables and fruit, but the point is that if your blood sugars become high, your insulin gets high. If your insulin gets high, it is cardiotoxic. It's hard on your heart. It also has a kind of domino effect with your sex hormones. And in men, it raises your stress hormone cortisol and lowers their testosterone, and also raises estrogen, because when men put on weight, they get more estrogen, and that contests their testosterone. In women, it has a different effect. If they do too much sugar and starch, the high insulin levels, which go up to control the sugars, the insulin is there to transport the sugar to different places and keep your blood sugar under control. But the insulin gets really high. In women, this stimulates their follicles to make testosterone instead of progesterone, and the eggs don't mature on their follicles, and they get polycystic ovaries sometimes that burst and are very painful, the little cysts. Or they just have absolutely no progesterone on board. Their periods get irregular. They get acne. They get some masculinizing effects like hair growth. Young women miss their periods. So the point I'm trying to make here is that exercise has a role in controlling for this. You do have to pay attention to your diet, but exercise has a role in controlling this. And the way it works is this. If you exercise, you will control your blood sugars It will help to lower your exercise. The exercise will lower blood sugars. It will change the way that your body understands fuel, food. It will change the way it utilizes the food you eat. It will store more of the carbohydrates that you eat for exercise use in the future. And it will add exercise adds muscle. And when you add muscle, you're adding tissue that's very sensitive to the insulin message. So you're sort of resisting the insulin resistance, so to speak. So you're resisting getting metabolic syndrome. You're changing your body composition toward leanness, toward more muscle, which protects you. You're changing your cardiovascular outcome by exercising and training them. And you're training in the way that your body uses the food that you eat. You're also protecting your bones, and you're stabilizing your hormones because you're controlling blood sugar and therefore you're controlling insulin. So this is how you control and protect your hormonal milieu by exercising. Now, that doesn't mean that some people as they age won't still need some adjustment or a little bit of help with their hormones, particularly with balancing them. But it does mean that you will need less and you'll be more sensitive and you will prevail. You'll be stronger. There were, in last week's show, which was supposed to be about health and community design, the built environment's effect on health, which I had to wing it alone. The guest didn't appear. There were some statistics in the book, and I want to read them again because I found them so profound. It says that a sedentary lifestyle was the most common modifiable risk factor for cardiovascular death and disease. 58% of reported cases. In contrast, to cigarette smoking was only 25, obesity 22, and hypertension 17. All of those are pretty good numbers. That's about a quarter. But over half of the cases of heart disease were because of a sedentary lifestyle. It's pretty profound. It also kind of came up with this this percentage, which is kind of an unrealistic thing, but it still gives you pause. 32 to 35% of deaths attributed to heart disease, colon cancer, and diabetes could have been prevented if every person in the U.S. were to become highly active, which is unlikely. But nevertheless, if everybody started to exercise, it would lower the number of deaths from those diseases. Those are so-called lifestyle diseases, even colon cancer to some extent. 32 to 35%. Overweight and obesity, which are controlled by exercising, have been linked to high blood pressure, gallbladder disease, osteoporosis, interesting, huh? And type 2 diabetes. And the relationship gets stronger as the person gets heavier, and also as a person's weight increases, their chances of having two or more of these chronic conditions multiplies. Inactive, non-smoking women at age 65 have 12.7 years of active life expectancy compared to 18.4 years for more highly active women. So there's your 6 years. Physical activity for adults reduces the amount of cognitive decline as an adult ages. Very important. Physical activity status was significantly associated with erectile dysfunction, meaning the highest risk was for those men who remained inactive and the lowest was for those who were active. Now, what I promised to do today was an exercise how-to. So I'm sorry that I spent so much time talking about why you should exercise, but I have to confess that I'm frustrated about how little people exercise, and I think that the reason is because I don't, it's what I said at the top, it's because I don't think people realize until they've lost their health how precious it was to them. And it really is a very small investment to spend even 20 minutes a day, which would make a profound difference in your outcome as you age. 20 minutes a day could prevent you from being really infirmed as you age. And if people really got this, if it really, really soaked in, I think that everyone would exercise. So let's talk about how we do that. First of all, let me just remind you, you're listening to Your Own Health and Fitness, and I'm doing a show today that's an exercise how-to, a guideline. There are two different metabolisms. We have two forms of metabolism. when you exercise. One of them primarily burns fat, and one of them primarily burns sugar. And that's simplistic, so let me make it a little more clear. When you go out and you take a vigorous run or a bicycle ride or you swim or even a long walk, a hike in the woods or something, and you're making an effort where you're pushing yourself a bit, but you can still talk, you can still carry on a conversation, you're not so out of breath that you're really panting. What happens is that as you go out and start moving around, depending on your fitness level, your body will shift into a fat-burning mode, which truthfully is the preferred mode of making energy for the human body. It's a much safer, much healthier way to make energy, and it is, as I said, it's the preferred way to do it. This is another reason for not eating high-starch, high-sugar foods, is that your energy-making cells sort of forget how to make energy from fat. So as you begin, depending on your fitness level, depending on how trained, how used to you are to exercising, your body will have to shift into this fat-burning mode, and it will use stored carbohydrates in your liver, of which you have about an hour and a half's worth, to get the fire going that helps you burn the fat. As I said, as the fitter you get, the less time it takes for that to happen. Some people, if they're really used to exercising, it's almost immediate. Other people, it might take 15, 20 minutes for them to start burning fat. But the more you exercise, the faster. You know, it might just take minutes for you to do it. When you do something that's a maximal effort, when you are getting out of breath, like instead of just walking up a hill, you really tromp up the hill as fast as you possibly can, or you sprint, or you jump rope, or you lift weights, and those are maximal efforts, you're burning stored carbohydrates, sugar. It's not sugar that you ate sugar. That is, you don't need to eat sugar to do it, but you have stored carbohydrates in your liver called glycogen. You're going to use that as your primary fuel. And the advantage to that form of exercise, which is called anaerobic, this is without air because you're sort of more panty, is important for building capacity and strength and muscle. So if you tear up a hill, you're building your lung capacity, your heart capacity, your circulatory capacity. Not that you're not training those parts of your body when you walk up the hill, but when you run up the hill and you're burning carbohydrates, that's how it works. Now, what happens is that you can't do that for very long. You can't make a maximal effort where you're out of breath for very long because you'll just use up all your glycogen. And that's part of the reason you're getting out of breath, is that those two, that's sort of your marker, is how out of breath. So those types of exercises require some rest periods in between. Aerobic exercise with air, where you're doing something, you can go on for quite a while like that. And when you're racing and you're doing aerobic exercise, there is a point where you'll become depleted of glycogen because you are making a maximal effort when you race. But if it's more casual, you're not. So, but both of these forms of your changes in your metabolism are profoundly important because they train different parts of your body and make different parts of your body optimal for you. As I mentioned, when you do any form of aerobic exercise, even if you're not making a maximal effort, you are taking care of your ticker and your lungs and your circulation. And the more you integrate some maximal effort, some pushing in your kind of easy aerobic exercise, if you take a walk, taking a hill periodically, so you do get a little out of breath, this is called interval training, is going to help because you do want to push your capacity. It is good to push your capacity, and it doesn't have to be endless unless you're going to take your vacation at Mount Everest and you're going to be climbing. So your body is, I always explain this to people, that your body is kind of like a child that loves you a lot and wants to do whatever you want it to do, and it will cooperate and adapt to anything you throw at it. The caution here is that if you throw some things at it that are, like sugar, it will adapt around that in a maladaptive way. But it's trying to cooperate with you, and it will do so if you give it an opportunity. This is a short way of describing something we call the training effect. You know what? I just need to. We're going to have to do something about the fact that I'm listening to. Could George? Can you just plug it into the board? Can you just plug it into the board? Just give us one moment here. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, that's much better. Okay. When we do the show here, I'm listening at it on the radio, and we have a lot of static on the radio today. And you don't, but I just needed to be able to hear myself. Okay. So the idea that your body's going to cooperate with you and it's going to adapt is very important here, because it kind of means that, well, I guess this is a segue into talking about the training effect. When you begin, you're going to have to begin where you are instead of where you would like to be. There is a training effect. And it isn't the case that everybody needs to train at a maximal effort all the time. In other words, you don't have to always push your capacity unless you're planning on being a peak performance athlete. And you may choose to do that, and people do that. The tricky part about being a peak performance athlete is that if you don't get enough rest and take care of yourself, if it isn't a primary focus in your life to care for yourself, then being a peak performance athlete becomes another form of stress. Because exercise is eustress, it's good stress, but it still becomes a stressor. So what I'm trying to say is that most people, to stay fit and to prolong their lives and have a vigorous lifestyle and, you know, not hurt themselves getting out of the car carrying groceries, don't have to do things at a maximal effort all the time, but it's good to integrate some periods, like interval, where you're pushing yourself a little bit so that you continue to build some capacity. So what I'm saying here is some people will find that for them, taking a walk somewhere more than 3 days a week, at least three, more like 4 to 5 or so, of any duration is going to optimize your health. And it will become more optimal as you increase, unless you get to a point where you're at a level of exercise and time commitment where you're not recovering well. So you're putting a lot of energy into it, and you're not getting enough rest, and you find you're getting tired. Then you're overtraining. Most people will train to a certain point, and then they'll find that they're at a level of fitness that really feels good to them, and they'll maintain it. And maintaining it actually is not a no-brainer. You actually have to make a fair amount of effort to maintain a good training level. Now, doing cardiovascular exercise or aerobic exercise, which is kind of saying the same thing, although you can do cardiovascular exercise that gets you out of breath, but most people think of biking and swimming and, you know, that sort of thing, walking, as cardiovascular or aerobic or classes, you know, it is great stuff, but I still really strongly believe that it's very important to also do some kind of strength training. The reason for this is because there are issues like core strength. This is something that Pilates, which is a form of resistance training or strength training, addresses. It can also be addressed by doing weight resistance training in a gym or at home with weights, with free weights and machines. The core strength means that you are strengthening yourself from the inside out. You're building enough strength in the inner muscles that hold your shoulders back and down and hold your stomach and your back muscles in place and hold your pelvis in place, so that when you are moving around, you learn how to basically secure the trunk of your body so that there's stability in your movement, no matter what you're doing, whether it's just lifestyle stuff like, you know, mowing the lawn or gardening or whatever, or doing actual exercise. This business of core strength and securing the trunk of your body when you exercise has to do also with a postural improvement, which is terribly important in strength training. But the other thing is that weightlifting or strength training is a very concentrated form of exercise. you basically isolate, not totally, but to some degree you isolate an area of your body, although there are sympathetic muscle groups that work in the area, like, you know, your chest, for instance, or your shoulders, and you maximally push the muscle to its capacity so that it will grow stronger and larger, although it won't grow enormous in most people unless they take a clue from our new governor and use some performance-enhancing materials. Most people will not get huge, even with a maximal effort. But people will show improvement in size, and that is what you do with a muscle, and that in, and that is protective and does stabilize and things like that. But you're able to isolate the chest in a way that you wouldn't if you were doing things like, say, even a push-up, because a push-up is not... The physics of a push-up is not as effective as, say, doing a bench press. It has to do with the fact that your arms are a little too far and you're recruiting your shoulders and not using your chest as much. Not to say push-ups don't work at all. But what I'm trying to say is that weight resistance training and push-ups can be used to some degree. You can use calisthenics. Give you a situation where you can really control the movement, the amount of effort, and it's very concentrated exercise. So you can do, actually, unlike the old recommendations of 4 sets or 6 sets of an exercise like a bench press, you can actually do 2 sets of a maximal effort and you will get a lot of results, because the more you do, the more you're beginning to move past the signal that your body gets to, oh, you want me to grow this muscle or you want me to maintain this level of strength. And you will go, if you go past it, you do 2 sets, and your body says, yeah, thank you, got it. Okay, when you go to bed tonight, I'm going to grow some chest muscles, you know. Versus you do 4 to 6 sets, and you just keep tearing up the muscle. You start burning protein in the muscle, and you actually lose some size. I know this is counterintuitive, but it's true. If you overdo it, you go in the opposite direction. So the idea with weight resistance training is you can isolate an area, build it, strengthen it, and give it a rest, and it's a very short duration. I'm going to need to take a brief break. When I come back from the break, I will continue with this solo show on an exercise how-to, and right now I'm talking about weight resistance. So stay with me. I'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman, and I'm doing a show about it's an exercise how-to, and I'm trying to encourage you to exercise as well as we head into the holiday season. If you missed parts of today's show and want to get a cassette copy of this or any other in the series Your Own Health and Fitness, you can go to my website with the requisite W's, yourownhealthandfitness.com, or you can call my information number, and you can do that 24 hours a day at 707-874-2772. I was talking about weightlifting, and I realized that one of the things that's difficult for people to get their brains around with weightlifting, first of all, it's difficult it in conjunction with their life activities, like if you can bicycle to work or walk to work or walk to the grocery store, you will get exercise more than, all the research that's been done shows that this is so. If you have to take time out from your life to go exercise, it often doesn't happen. It becomes very low on the list because it is people who are advantaged, who can take time out from their work day or from their families or whatever to do this. It's a luxury. So weight resistance training is one of those things that gets more difficult, but I would be remiss if I didn't explain to you its role in protecting your health in the long term. This is not to say that you should give up, throw your hands in the air and say, I can't do any of it because to be optimal I have to do weights and I have to do the cardio and I just don't have time for any of it, so I'm not going to do anything. Because as I started the show, what I was saying is, if you just walk out the door after breakfast and walk for 10 or 15 minutes and do it again after lunch, you will add many years to your life. And it will not just be adding years, but it will be adding vitality. And it will give you many, many more years of vigorous health instead of being infirmed and dependent. That's the thing to keep your mind on. Not you know, well, because some people don't care if they live an extra 6 years. It's not that. It's how the quality of your life is as you age. And believe me, nobody wants to be in pain and uncomfortable and ill. So exercise is the deal. All right, now back to weights. It is possible to do some of this at home, and it's also possible with weights to start very, very lightly. There are elastic bands that you can buy, and there are even some videos now on how to use them, and they mimic weight resistance moves using elastic bands. Sometimes they're called Dyna bands, D-Y-N-A. Bands. There's weight resistance equipment that isn't terribly costly. Some of it's compact. General rule of thumb is it's the machines sometimes compromise the effectiveness of the exercise, because one of the things, and I'm not talking about if you go to a gym, there's machines in there. I'm not saying the machines are doing that. I'm saying that when you try to do everything in a machine for the home use, like I don't want to use brand names, but there are various things that use, like the resistance, instead of coming from a metal weight, is coming from a piece of rubber that expands or something. Or anyway, it makes it easier for it to be. This isn't to say these things are completely useless, but what happens with these is that they're designed, and built into them is a limit to what you can do in terms of controlling for your biomechanics. That means how you yourself move. And one of the important things, going back to the issue of the training effect or core strength, is that you want to build from the inside out when you exercise and strengthen the body. So you need to not only start lighter, but you need to address weaknesses in the trunk of your body. And that would include things like the base of your trapezius, between your shoulder blades, because if that isn't strong, you'll have a tendency to throw your shoulders into the moves that you make, and that will damage your shoulders. You want your shoulders to stay back and down. So again, the way that you're securing the trunk is that you're securing the base of your trapezius, so your shoulders stay back and down. You're controlling the way that you hold your pelvis in place by not tucking your pelvis under you when you train, but by very gently letting your belly button drop to your spine. Now, you're not literally doing that. You're not sucking your stomach up to a point where you can't move, but you're maintaining a little bit of pressure in your stomach. One man that I was training many years ago said, oh, you mean like get ready to take a punch? And so what he means is you're bracing yourself. A nicer way to think of it is that if you watch dancers, professional dancers like ballet dancers and modern dancers, they never fling their limbs, their arms out, without first pulling in to the center of their body and then having their arms go out. So it almost looks like their arms are straight out, but they're somehow kind of more sucked back into their bodies, if that makes any sense. Shoulders back and down, stomach secured, back is in a neutral position, not arched, not tucked, whatever's natural for you. And then the weightlifting starts, but everybody's capacity to move will be different. It'll have to do with what sorts of body torque patterns they developed throughout their lives, what kinds of emotional patterns you have, whether you're kind of somebody who caves in on yourself because you've always had a little bit of a self-esteem thing and you feel a little shy, or if you're a brazen person and you tend to arch your back and throw your shoulders back and your chest forward, you might have an overarched back, which could cause some lower back pain. Either way, it could cause some hip and back problems. So the nice thing about weights is that they can repair these things, but when you buy a machine that's supposed to do everything, you may not be able to perform the movements that the machine restricts you in, the way it restricts you, sort of. So I usually recommend to people, if they want to get some home equipment, that they really just get the basics. It's like the old trick of, you know, what you used to see out in the in front of the garage. You know, these young men out there with their a bench and a bar and some weights and things like that. You can do an amazing amount with an inexpensive bench, and it can be small so that it can fit in your garage or something, and some weights, some free weights. That said, it's probably a good idea for people to get some kind of training just in the very beginning to learn how to handle the weights properly and to remember that the first few weeks of lifting weights, if you've never done it before, the first couple of weeks, you're going to build muscle faster than you're going to strengthen your ligaments and tendons. They tend to lag. So you want to make an effort that you can feel with the weights, but and you don't want to overdo it. But you also want to be careful that you're not immediately starting to lift extremely heavy weights, even though you think you can, keeping in mind that your joints and your ligaments and your tendons may need a couple of weeks to get used to it. Once you become used to lifting weights, it is best to go ahead and make a maximal effort, and that means that you push yourself to the point where the muscle feels like it may not be able to do the last set. The reason for doing this is because less than a maximal effort, when you're, you know, there's this myth about weightlifting that you can do light weights with lots of repetitions and that you will build a long, ropey muscle and you'll look like a gymnast or a dancer or something. That's not true. What happens when you do that is that the muscle gets a signal to develop and grow in a very small range of lifts. So if you're doing a bicep curl where you're lifting your arm up and down, you're doing your bicep, just as an example, you're going to want to do maybe 8 to 12 repetitions before you by 9 or 10 or 11, you want to feel like the muscles really, you may not be able to do the last one. The reason for this is because less is more when it comes to weightlifting. But if you don't make a maximal effort, you're just going to pump a lot of lactic acid into your muscles, which will make them burn. So feeling the burn, that idea of feel the burn, is actually a myth. It's a mistake in a certain kind of way. I mean, you may feel a burn if you get in a spin class at the gym or something where you're bicycling outside, if you're lucky enough to have a place to bicycle, and you've lowered the resistance on the bike, you've gone into a low gear to take a hill and you're turning over very fast, you will produce a lot of lactic acid. It's a byproduct of the metabolism that you're in, and it will make the muscle burn. That doesn't mean that muscle's growing. It means your body's actually going, please stop doing that. And you don't have to have that burn in order. In fact, as I said, if you make a maximal effort, it's almost better to kind of go in a slightly higher gear and push those muscles and just have it feel intense. But in any case, the lightweights just are going to be less effective at building muscle. It may make some difference, but it's not going to build an effective muscle. Nice thing about weightlifting, concentrated, short duration, and requires recovery in order to be effective. Now, this is also true of your running, swimming, biking, you know, whatever kind of aerobic or cardiovascular exercise you choose. Rest is where your body makes the important adaptations that protect you from all of that stuff that we were talking about at the beginning of the show, metabolic syndrome. So an example would be that I remember years and years ago, in the 80s, during the exercise boom, I don't know how many people remember Covert Bailey writing about exercise. He had books called Fit or Fat, and one of the things he talked about was the fact that somebody could be a large person and still have very little fat on their body and be very, very fit, and somebody else could look thin and actually have no muscle and be completely out of shape. So being fit was a very specific kind of thing, and it had to do with the composition of your body, how much muscle, and how fit your heart and your lungs and your muscles are. He was very good at explaining very complicated physiologic ideas about exercise physiology in kind of humorous terms. And one of the ways that he used to describe it is that if you do a lot of weightlifting one day and then you go to bed and you're fighting a cold, but you've done this, you knew you were fighting a cold, but you go ahead and you do this really hard workout with weights, you think, I'm going to sweat this out, I'm tough, you go to bed at night and your body is like, okay, so I can build the muscle or I can fight the cold. What should I do? It can't sort of do both, not very well. So I guess I'm getting off on another topic, which is the issue of exercising when you're sick. And let me go to that again. But part of what I'm trying to tell you is that actually in an optimal situation, what happens is you do a hard weight lifting routine when you're feeling good. You feel up to it and you do it. If you're not feeling up to it, you do a little less hard, but you still do something that you can feel. You go to bed at night and your body is going to say, good, now I have the time and the energy to build this muscle. That's when it happens. Or to adapt to that longer bike ride that you took. In the early stages of training, one of the things that happens is that, as I said, the first 2 weeks with weightlifting, your joints and tendons and ligaments are getting used to this thing. In the first 2 weeks of doing something like hiking or running or swimming or biking or something, what happens is that the initial changes that happen in your body are going to be neurological. They're going to have to do with how your body communicates with itself in order to perform the effort that you made, in order to accommodate you in making an effort. So the first few days or the first weeks or so, you may feel a little bit tired because your body's kind of going, this person can't be serious. Is she going to actually continue hiking every other day up these hills? She can't be serious. So at the end of the week, you're tired. And then you keep doing it. You go back next week, you do it again. And then the body sort of goes, oh, well, okay, tired didn't work. So, okay, I guess we're going to have to get more efficient at communicating here. So we're going to have these communication lines that say, uh-oh, here she goes. She's going up the hill again. Let's send some sugar out of from the liver. Let's take the sugar and, you know, throw it in here and have it go through the bloodstream and hit those muscles in time and then get the oxygen. And we're doing, you know, and they're moving stuff around to accommodate you. So that gets more efficient. Now, this is good news to have all of that be working better. It means your circulation is going to start working better. People who exercise regularly, you'll notice, have larger, you can see the veins in their arms and their hands, people who exercise. People always remark on this when they start getting more fit. They look at themselves and go, wow, look, I have more vascularity. You can see, I didn't used to have veins that show. We're not talking about thin skin and purple weirdness and, you know, age spot. I mean, we're talking about just that the vascularity starts to show. So neurologically, you get better. But it takes, you know, into the couple of weeks before your muscles actually start to change. I mean, you get some changes pretty quickly, but not. It's primarily going to be effectiveness. You're going to get more effective at performing the exercise. And that's where the effect on your metabolism and on your fuel using gets better. This is how, instead of when you eat carbohydrates, instead of it saying, oh, let's put this into some storage around her hips because she's going to need it through the winter because it's going to be cold and there's not going to be any food around. It's going to say, oh, carbohydrates, oh, God, put it in the liver. This woman is exercising. You know, it's going to do that. So you're less likely to gain fat when you exercise regularly. So there's something to be said for consistency with exercise because that's when the body, as I said, being a cooperative child and trying to please you, is going to set up this whole thing and try to do it the way you want it. And then if you slack off, it'll slack off. So it becomes more effective. Then, if you continue to do this, the speed with which your body converts from one metabolism to another becomes much faster. You're hiking in the woods and you come to a hill and you start taking the hill and you start panting and your body shifts into another metabolism very fast and you can do it. And then you're on an even keel and your body shifts over there. So it gets much faster at shifting to a fat burning, shifting into a sugar burning and being really effective. So that all those durations. And that means that your composition of your body changes. So the cardiovascular exercise, even if it's just walking, does help you to burn fat. The strength training exercise helps you to add muscle. Now, incidentally, another side effect of exercise is that there's this whole question of, I'm exercising so that I can eat more food. Well, as we've pointed out in a show recently, if you eat a large apple, if it's a really big fall apple, there might be 150 calories in that apple. You'd have to, like, I don't know, swim for almost an hour to burn that off. And then you eat the apple, and that's the end of that. So big deal. You get to eat an extra apple a day. Or, gosh, if we're talking cookies, it gets even more difficult. Maybe two cookies? I don't know. So the point here is that it isn't so much about how many actual, although, gosh, I mean, it isn't hurt to burn calories. But what's more important is it speeds up your metabolism. It literally speeds up your metabolism. Before I came here to do this show, I guess that's why I'm talking about hiking in the woods. I took a hike, and I was going up and down hills, and I hiked for 40 minutes. And I was not completely out of breath, but I was partially, you know, a little bit out of breath part of the time. For the next 4 hours, my metabolism will be running faster than if I had not done that. Another example of this, incidentally, just to add this in, not to get too off topic, is one of the reasons I'm very insistent that people don't skip breakfast is that all that sets your metabolism for the day. If you get up in the morning and you don't eat, and you've been, no, unless you got up in the middle of the night and ate, if you don't eat for 8 or 10 hours or 7 hours, whatever it is, you get up and you don't eat again, your body is going to think that you're starving. It's going to shift you down into a slow metabolism. And people who do that, and people who have gotten overweight, and people who have gotten deconditioned over a long period of time, are in many ways slowing their metabolism down. So the amazing thing about exercise is, even if I hadn't made a maximal effort, even if I had done something that I do sometimes of just walking for 15 minutes in the morning just to get myself moving, will speed up your metabolism too, and it stays speed up for hours. So it isn't so much about how many calories you burn, it's how many more calories you can eat without gaining weight because your metabolism is faster. Now the weight now and then, in addition, the walk was burning primarily fat. So that's good. That means I can eat some fat. It means that my body stays leaner. The additional thing, though, is that if you're doing weightlifting as well, one of the remarkable things they've discovered when they studied people weightlifting is that weightlifting sessions or resistance training, Pilates, I guess you could say calisthenics if they're really targeted and well done, maximal efforts, climbing, rock climbing could be considered strength training too. Is that when people stopped, even though they were burning glycogen, sugar, carbohydrate, I shouldn't say sugar, it's really stored carbohydrate in your liver, then at the end of that, although they weren't burning fat during the exercise, for many more hours after the exercise, more than even 4 hours, their metabolism was speeded up. So there's something about the maximal effort of strength training and working the muscles that speeds the metabolism up for even longer than a cardiovascular session. This is why the combination of strength training and walking or running or swimming or, you know, together is optimal. If all you can do is walk, then at least have some of your walk be maximal. Try to find, either make some of the walk slow and then speed up a little bit. Again, all of this is taking into consideration how your health is and how you are, and that's a big consideration. So we're just talking about, here's the outline of, you know, here are some principles, here's some exercise principles. How you apply them is going to be very individual and always will be. A reminder, you're listening to Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman, and I'm doing a show on exercise how-to. One of the things people ask, there are several things that people ask me about that they're confused about. We talked a little bit about the dangers of overtraining and underresting. This is a big deal. So that's why I'm saying, for those of you who really don't have the time and really feel like you can't, the time is too precious for you to go and do these things, literally going for a walk, taking your kids out, doing any of that kind of stuff, particularly if you're an active person anyway, if you are doing those extra little things like some gardening and chasing after children or parking farther from the store or attempting to take walks to do things, that all makes a big difference. It really does. But if you are a person who can't get to the gym or do something like that, just keep in mind that the consistency of what you do, that the fact that you continue to do it and that you make some maximal effort is going to be ideal. And one of the downsides of people who don't just do moderate activity and exercise, it doesn't even have to be exercise, it can just be activity, is that it's possible to get very addicted to maximal exercise, because you do get a burst of a lot of happy chemicals in your brain. You get a lot of endorphins and norepinephrine and adrenaline and all kinds of goofy things that make you feel very nice. And people literally become addicted to that. People also have a tendency to become addicted to an active lifestyle, I think, because they're kind of being maybe a moving target. I mean, they're not resting, because when they rest, they feel anxious. And that's an interesting thing to look at. So I see people in my practice who are over-exercising. And there is a real danger in that, because all of the benefits of exercise get turned back around, while moderate amounts of exercise and optimal amounts of exercise, if your body is in a training effect and it's responding properly, is going to help improve your immunity, improve your fat burning, increase leanness, protect your heart and lungs, increase your muscle mass, protect you from metabolic syndrome, you know, by keeping your stress hormones down and your hormonal milieu in good shape. If you overdo it, if you're a person who, I have to confess I did this for a while, goes and spends 2 hours in the gym and then goes and does a 40-minute, you know, this or that, and doesn't get enough rest, you will turn around the good effects of exercise. You will have more of a stress response. Your resting pulse rate, instead of going down, will go up. Your capacity to burn fat will be affected. You won't do it as well. You'll begin to get colds and flus. You'll be tired. You won't sleep well. So immunity is affected. Appetite's affected, both up and down. And you can, in fact, push yourself into a hormonal nightmare, because your stress hormones are so high. So rest is absolutely essential. So one of the cautions I have is that people like to use cardiovascular machines, and that's fine, but you want to really make sure that the biomechanics of the machine works with who you are. Step climbing machines can be extremely hard on the hip and back for people, and if you are using one of those, please do not lean forward and rest your arms, because you're going to really hurt your lower back. You're supposed to stand up straight when you're doing that. Not everybody can do those. I never did well on steppers. And the high-intensity aerobic class, where you're using steps, same thing applies. If it's a high impact, you have to really watch it and pay attention to how your body is feeling. Some of the old-fashioned aerobic classes, where they have you swinging your legs around and doing leg lifts, sometimes can cause problems with your hip flexors. In other words, you're working a hip flexor, which is a tiny little muscle that's designed to raise and lower your leg, and then you aren't actually building muscle in the thigh. You're just hurting the hip flexor and straining it. So some of these things where you're on your hands and knees and you're flinging a leg out in various positions can be difficult and cause some injuries as well. So be careful with some of that stuff. That's not to say that you shouldn't do it. A lot of people are very well trained who are teaching these classes these days. Remember to stretch. Very important. In fact, even for weightlifters, a little hint here, you'll look better if you stretch. You'll also feel better, and you'll protect yourself. Incidentally, weightlifting does not make you less flexible. It makes you more flexible, and it makes you strong and flexible in motion, as long as you aren't ridiculously silly about your range of motion with weights. Remember, you are holding a weight. You don't have to do the same kind of range of motion with weights that you do with other exercises. Timing of exercise for people is going to vary, and a lot of it's going to depend on when you have the most energy and feel the best, and when you can relax. For some people, it's really just go out 10 minutes, that's it. Just, you know, can you, or if you have some briefs to read, and because you're a high-powered exec, get on a bicycle and read the briefs. You know what I mean? Do something that builds it into your life, so it's realistic. Or, like I said, just if you're a mom at home with kids, just take the kids out with you. If you're a construction worker and you're working really hard physically at home, maybe at work, maybe you just want to come home and take a walk after dinner, you know, just to kind of cool out. But for pathologies, it's very specific. If there's heart disease in your family and you're trying to protect yourself, walking after meals will help prevent clotting. It's also very good for diabetics to walk after meals. It will lower your blood sugars. So I think I've given you some kind of guidelines for exercise. Another thing to keep in mind here is that during the winter, when it's cold and dark, exercise speeding up your metabolism is going to be very helpful in preventing that sort of holiday weight gain thing that people get into. It controls your appetite as well. People who exercise tend to, the days you exercise, you'll be less hungry. This is counterintuitive again, but it is the case. And people who exercise regularly have noticed that on the days they take off, they're hungrier. Also, keep in mind what I said about rest. For aerobic exercise to maintain a training effect in terms of cardiovascular, heart and lung fitness and muscle memory and all that, you need to do things at least 3 days a week, and that's minimal. So you want to make sure that you're doing at least that, or you'll lose the conditioning. You won't have it. You'll be in a kind of weekend warrior state if you're only going out on the weekends and not doing something during the week, and it can be just a little bit. Same thing with weights and strength training. Consistency is the key, although with strength training, you can do it sort of every other day. You can do it as little again as 3 days a week, but when you start getting into 1 day a week, you start risking injury because the body has to be reminded of what it's doing. So less is more. Get enough rest and do whatever it is that you can. It will improve your life now and as you age, and it will protect you from disease. I want to thank you for listening. I'm Lena Berman. If you need more information or if you want a cassette copy of this show or any other in the series, Your Own Health and Fitness, you can call my information number 24 hours at 707-874-2772. Or for a list of other available shows, go to the website, yourownhealthandfitness.com. Next week, I'll be interviewing Christine Adeski. She's a journalist and producer, and she's also the director of a film called Pills, Profits, and Protest, Voices of Global AIDS. It's a documentary by the Action Life Collective, and we'll be talking about that. The engineer for Your Own Health and Fitness on the at the Powerhouse Brewery in Sebastopol is George Curtis, and thank you to him. Thanks to Johnny Otis in the Powerhouse. And at KPFA, Sally Phillips. I'm Lena Berman. Your Own Health and Fitness is produced live by Free Speech Radio, KPFA 94.1 FM. And remember, being informed not only protects your health, it protects your freedom. See you next week.